Money FM 89.3, best of drive time. In the spotlight on Money FM 89.3.
Money FM 89.3. Good afternoon. It is drive time with Elliot Danka, Timothy Goh, and Chua Tien Tien. It's time now for In the Spotlight. And today we're talking about cybersecurity. In fact, the White House announced its national cyber strategy just a few weeks back. Australia themselves set to overhaul its cybersecurity laws. And here in Singapore, the Cybersecurity Agency of Singapore recently launched the Cybersecurity Labeling Scheme, or CLS, for consumer smart devices. All this part of efforts to improve Internet of Things security, or IoT, right? So clearly policymaking and measures on cybersecurity, it's really picking up because businesses need to be better prepared. But that's the question we're asking today. Are they prepared enough? Now, according to Mandiant's Threat Intelligence Global Report, business leaders in Singapore still do not place enough emphasis on cyber threats to their organization and maintain that it won't happen to us type of mentality. I don't know if you've heard that before. Despite all the high-profile cybersecurity attacks that we read about in the papers. So why are business leaders in Singapore still having this mindset? Let's try and find out more. On the line with me is Iha Lim, who is Lead Threat Intelligence for JPAC at Mandiant, which is now part of Google Cloud. Iha, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, good afternoon. I'm well. How are you?
Very good, sir. Thanks so much for helping me out with this. I understand your company is a subsidiary of Google. Of course, this company rose to prominence back in February 2013. You guys released a report directly implicating China in a cyber espionage. I won't say that was the first time, but really that's when a lot of people started to take notice of cyber threats.
Yes, actually, it was quite groundbreaking at that point in time because it's the first time a private vendor actually specifically wrote about cyber attempts that are backed by nations in such a comprehensive manner.
Mm. Is that one of the ways you've seen cyber threats evolve over the years? I guess broadly, what has stood out for you in terms of this cyber threat evolution?
I think because it's a very broad question. So looking at from the way technologies have evolved as well, the cyber threats have always followed how technologies evolve. So in a sense, just now mentioned about IoTs, that's one big factor. You mentioned about, you know, how countries are stepping forward to put regulations in because regulators are also now aware that day-to-day consumers like ourselves, we all have smartphones, we all are vulnerable to cyber attacks as well, and as well as enterprises.
You bring up a good point, right? Evolving along with how technology has evolved. I mean, one area of cyber threat is image. Your face is data. So deepfake comes along. That's a threat. I suppose sooner or later, you're going to be researching on how the metaverse is going to have to deal with cyber threats.
Yeah, it's a matter of time, actually. Yeah. Like, as soon as we see any new technology becoming viral, that is also how the bad guys are seeing how they can use this for malicious purposes. So actually, it's always been a double-edged sword for us.
Is it, in terms of the how much cyber threats have increased, I don't want to ask a boring number, like what are the kind of numbers you're looking at here, but is it sort of in line in terms of like every year it's doubling, or every year, you know, they're three times more? Or if, let's say, a new technology comes up, then you see a sudden surge. How do I balance this?
Okay, it's very hard to quantify the numbers because you have to look at how the numbers are being collected in the first place.
Okay.
So if you were to look at general trends, right, it's always been a year-on-year increase in terms of variety, in terms of the types of the attacks that we see across different sectors, different pockets, the population. You know, like, for example, now, let's say digital banking is a thing, right? Okay. Like, many countries are now adopting digital banking. This is a new vector where can be compromised potentially because everything's online and people are, you know, susceptible to maybe social engineering. So this is another new sort of like area that is created for cyber criminals to potentially exploit. So anything new, even the pandemic itself was a sort of like a new terrain for them to do attacks. And we've seen a lot of attacks during that period as well. So I would say any geopolitical or, you know, technology evolution that has become viral, a lot of people using it, that is where the attention will be diverted to.
Okay. Where is the most common problem in companies now in form of, you know, allowing cybersecurity breaches? I would like to guess that it's the people themselves. Would I be right to say that?
Yeah. I think, as you mentioned earlier, right, the kind of it won't happen to us mentality is one of the biggest problems that we are seeing. Because during our conversations with customers, they would always say that, oh, I already spent X million on my cybersecurity product. Okay. I should be secure, right? Yeah, because there's a false sense of security when you spend more. They have this conception that if you spend more, you're more secure. But actually, in reality, that's not the case. It's almost like our human body. If you take more supplements, it doesn't mean you're healthier, right? So it's the same concept, but somehow this is the misconception that is quite prevalent out there, that if I spend a lot of money on my security or I buy many, many vendor devices, I will be more secure. This mentality, I think, requires time and requires maybe awareness. And requires also sometimes, you know, getting hacked once that really truly proves to them that all these devices are actually irrelevant. You just need one or two good partners to secure your landscape.
Wow.
So I guess it's a matter of time, yeah.
It's a bit parental, right, the way you say, you play until it you get hurt.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, that's how sometimes companies learn through the hard way.
And you can't keep throwing money at the problem, as you said. Oh, I've got the best and most high-tech devices, right? But this feels like an impossible question to ask you, Ihao. And I do apologize because it sounds so impossible. Why do they still have this whole, it won't happen to us? I mean, you can see it in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there's a lot of reasons why.
Okay.
Maybe there's a disconnect between the operational team and the leadership, because maybe culturally they don't want to communicate bad news upwards. So whenever the boss asks them, how's everything, they'll say, oh, we are good, but without revealing the real picture.
Ah.
So maybe that's a cultural thing within the company. But of course, this is a stereotype. It doesn't mean it's the same for every company.
Sure.
Second one could be the fact that they always think that we are not that big, we are not that important. So some might think that, oh, I'm just a small company in Singapore, for example. Mm-hmm. But you know, in the eyes of the cyber criminal, right, they don't really care or where are you from, what is your business size. As long as they see something that is vulnerable, they will go for it. They always go for low-hanging fruits. So in fact, one ironic thing is those companies that always tell me that I don't think I will be hit, why should I be a target, why should I care, those are the ones that will be first to be hit with something that they are not prepared for. For example, a commodity ransomware.
Okay.
Because they always think that, you know, maybe I'm just a bakery and nobody will target me. I'm not a bank. I'm not a hedge fund that's making millions and millions. So this is the misconception that, unfortunately, this is also the reality that we are seeing.
That's a pretty good one. I often forget that for a lot of these cyber bad guys, sometimes they just do it for good sport. And, you know, that's a different kind of motivation, right?
Correct. And to them, it's a business, right?
Yeah.
So it's a business. So they don't really distinguish between targets as much. As soon as they think there's a way to make money, they will go for the target regardless of whatever country, whatever. Because in the cyber world, there's no such thing as geo boundaries. Country A and country B is just a series of IP addresses apart, right? So it's so simple to change targets. For example, we see banking scams, banking Android applications that originated in South America first, then seeing them in Southeast Asia as well. So it's very easy for the cyber criminals to actually change targets just by changing the IP addresses or the company names, domains, etc.
That's a really good point.
So,
Ihao, this is definitely your area of expertise. When I'm trying to put together a successful cyber program for my company, what are some of the key factors that I need to consider here?
Great question, actually. So I think number one, you have to be aware of your landscape. So you have to define and assess what is your current landscape like. So what do I mean by landscape?
Okay.
Landscape essentially means what industry you're in, what country you're in, what businesses you're in, who are your partners in your supply chain, what technologies you are reliant on. All these questions will lead you to, you know, define a series or a group of threat actors that could be interested in you, in a sense that we have seen them target this kind of industries before, this kind of supply chain, this kind of, you know, applications before. So this actually goes back to threat intelligence.
Okay.
You have to know who are targeting you, and then from there you can design program where you invest and you hire people and you build capabilities and processes. And just bear in mind, cybersecurity is more than just technologies. It's also people, process, and technologies. Three components have to work in harmony in order to be secure. So other than that, you also have to test and monitor. So go back to what I mentioned just now about people who spend millions and think that the more I buy, the more secure I am. It's not true, because you have to validate your security setup. In a sense, you have to make sure your internal mechanisms are able to detect or able to deter threat actors when they try to penetrate your environment. And then as well as monitor, you have to make sure that daily traffic is being looked at. If there's any abnormal logins, you have to investigate, because it's also a commodity now that people's credentials, like login IDs for your emails or for your, you know, work IDs, are being sold on cyber criminal marketplaces. So I can pretend to be you and log in into your company's account, and it won't trigger alert because the company will think that I am you.
All right.
But actually, I bought it off somewhere or stole it off somewhere, you see. So you have to monitor behavior of the users as well. So there's actually a multifaceted approach. There's no one silver bullet that you can just, you know, fix this problem so simply.
It's quite interesting because some of everything that you've talked about can be done by an AI, yet at the same time you have to have a sense of integration, yet you still need that human instinct in terms of profile building of your users, right, to kind of understand the behavioral science there. Which leads me to the question of talent gap. I don't know, this is such a common word to use now. What exactly is the challenge here when we say there is a talent gap?
I think actually the problem is experience.
So
there is a lot of people who can take a lot of certifications and get a lot of fancy degrees and call themselves this and that. But when it comes to a real ransomware attack, the ability to remain calm, the ability to know that you have to do this step, you have to inform regulator first, you have to inform board, you have to inform shareholders, it's something that you cannot buy. Or you cannot really train. So I guess the talent gap goes back to the fact that many people are skilled now with certs and stuff, but they might not have the real-time war experience. You know, so having a partner, for example, companies, when they consider who they want to work with, they should really consider cybersecurity vendors with real war experience, who have dealt with real big-time incidents and managed to maneuver through that crisis, you know, properly. So I know it's a bit challenging to say that you know, you need experience, because it's a chicken and egg thing, right? Like, you never get hacked, how will you get experience? So I guess that's where the real difficulty lies, because you can't really pay for a cert that gives you the experience of how you navigate a company through a ransomware attack, for example.
Actually, you bring up a really good point, because I've had the pleasure of being part of one of those crisis management in case of terrorist attack. What do you do in terms of comms? And out of a class, only four or five of us managed to stand out. It's that, I want to say, soft skills that a cert can't give you, or you know, to that effect.
Exactly.
It's been a really insightful conversation. I do appreciate your time today. I've been speaking with Ihao Lim, who is Lead Threat Intelligence for JPAC at Mandiant. Ihao, have a great Wednesday evening ahead.
You too. Have a great day. Bye.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.